to discuss some of the halachos that can come up or do come up in the experience of the 2 days that we're experiencing today, both Hanukkah and Thanksgiving, kind of coming together and joining together as one. I'm sure people have seen the articles written. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, whether it is, whether it's not. It doesn't happen all too often, whether it is actually once-in-a-lifetime or not. It's not something that commonly occurs. So there are a few interesting halachos, and the truth is, I'll blow my cover, most of these halachos can come up any Hanukkah, at any given Hanukkah party, but since it's the custom of many to have a Thanksgiving meal, I figured it would be an appropriate time to discuss some of these questions and halachos that come up, but really they're applicable throughout. At the end, we'll discuss more in a theoretical and, I guess, a hashkafic sense of what these 2 days represent and the common denominator between the two of them. But we'll begin with some of the halachos. So I wanted to discuss at first the halachos of lighting Hanukkah candles at a party. Or for today, we'll say at a Thanksgiving meal. Because let's say you gather together at a Thanksgiving meal and it's around the time for candlelighting, either before or after, and the meal continues either through the time of candlelighting. So should there be a candle lighting? Or, for example, if a family goes out to a restaurant for a Thanksgiving meal or a Hanukkah meal or whatever the meal is, and it happens to be Hanukkah also, then the question is, do they light at the meal? Do you light at one of these parties? And as I mentioned, it's true about any Hanukkah party, whether it would be appropriate to have a menorah lighting, a candle lighting, at that party.
The problem is joining the two events together?
No. It would just be halakhically, whether it would be appropriate. Why? So obviously, if you're at home and it's time for candle lighting, so then certainly it would be appropriate to have your candle lighting at home and have everybody there at the same time to watch the candle lighting. The question is, everybody else who's not at home, if you're not home having a meal or having a party, but rather you're visiting a relative or you're at a restaurant having such a meal or at a hall having such a party, so the question is it appropriate to have the candle lighting there? So first I'd like to take it from the lens of whether there should be a candle lighting at a public party, and then to discuss if it's at somebody's home but it's not your home, whether you should light there as well in order to continue eating. So the truth is that this question as to a public candle lighting, a public Hanukkah candle lighting, is not really discussed all too much until the last, let's say, 60 years, 70 years or so, maybe a little bit less than that, let's say 50 to 60 years, and it's really come up in regard to lighting in public parks and what we know the Chabad and Lubavitch customs of having parties and lightings and parks and bringing all different people to life. So that's really where the discussion is, where the discussion applies. And some of the discussion about if you have some big type of a party, so there are some questions that were asked about those as well. The problem is that since it's such a new phenomenon, the literature that we have to deal with it is very limited. So if we try to find the closest example, the closest situation that would be to something like a public menorah lighting, which is not at somebody's home, that would be probably the lighting of the menorah in the shul. The lighting of the menorah in a shul, because a shul is nobody's home, and yet we know that the custom is that every shul in between Mincha and Maariv lights the menorah.
They didn't have a wedding on Hanukkah in the time of Rashi?
Maybe they did, but the question did not come up too much. Probably because they didn't have wedding halls. They probably made weddings in people's homes.
People get together.
So there is a big question about what do you do when a person's getting married? Where do the chasen and kala light the menorah? So the answer of it's a big question, but the answer of many rabbis who are writing tshuvas in Israel, and this will give you just a little bit of a perspective, as to, and you can imagine, you know, a few few hundred years ago, even more so, they say what they should do is that after the Yichud Room, they should run home to their apartment, have a little meal, and light their candles there. Okay? So that doesn't work so much in America, for, you know, to have such a big break for the couple to run home to their apartment, light candles there. But if that's what they're writing in the 1980s in Israel, so you can imagine what they're writing in the, you know, in the 1200s in France, what a chasen kalah should do. So the whole experience of a wedding and the whole celebration was different than what we have now. So I imagine it wasn't exactly the same question. But if we look at it through the lens of, let's say, lighting in shul. So let's understand why we light in shul, when the custom began. Again, lighting in shul, we have very few primary sources to deal with. It's not mentioned anywhere in the Mishnah. It's not mentioned anywhere in the Gemara. It's not mentioned in many Rishonim even. Until the first place that I saw mentioned is in the 12th century. The 12th century in the Sefer HaIttur, which is written by Rav Yitzchak ben Rav Abba Murray in France, in Provence, France, in the 12th century. That was the first place that's mentioned, or that even this, that all of the Svarim quote, who's the earliest source, they quote the Baal HaIttur. So that's when the whole custom seems to have arose. And the question is, why do we light candles in shul? What's the purpose if we all go home and light at home? So what's the point of having menorah lighting in shul? There are a few different discussions, there are a few different opinions about the matter. And the truth is that in the early times and even continued into later times, even nowadays, not everybody would be comfortable making a bracha on the candle lighting in shul. So why would you say that we light candles in the shul? For Pirsumei Nisa. So that's one opinion, is for Pirsumei Nisa. And what's interesting is that there's three basic answers to that question, and then, you know, each answer has different ways of saying it, and everything is a little bit different. So there are two ways to understand the Pirsumei Nisa. The Rivash, who was... The Rivash lived in Spain in the 14th century. He calls it a minhag vasikin. A minhag vasikin means that it was a very old minhag. So in his days, in the 14th century, that means they've been lighting candles, at least based on the sources that we have, they've been lighting candles for at least 100 years. And he calls it a minhag vasikin. It's an old minhag that we light candles in shul. Why do we light candles in shul? So the Rivash explains, because it used to be, the Gemara records, that the best place to light candles is to light them outside. And that's the minhag in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, and the Gemara records that was the minhag in the Gemara's time, that they would light the menorah outside, either by the doorway or outside by the street, so that everybody walking by can see. But the Gemara tells us that then it became dangerous for the Jewish people to light menorahs in such a public way, so they started lighting inside in the window. But then that was dangerous, so they started lighting inside on their tables so that nobody would see it from the outside. The Rivash says that since the purpose of the candle lighting, of the menorah, is Pirsumei Nisa, is to publicize the miracle of Hanukkah, and the problem was that we can no longer light outside, and we're all lighting inside, so how can we publicize the miracle of Hanukkah? The Rivash says, you should light when you have a big gathering of people together. Light in the shul, because that's inside. Nobody from the outside will see, but a lot of people will be there lighted to see the menorah being lit. And therefore you'll fulfill the publicizing of the miracle while still not being able to light outside, and therefore there will be, that's why he says we should light in shul. What's interesting about that is that what about nowadays? What if nowadays we can light outside? Right? What about the shuls in Israel? Does that mean that the shuls in Israel should no longer light the menorah in the shul because they can light outside, or because they do light outside? We can light outside. Right? There are a few people in every community has a few people who light their menorah outside. They get one of those glass boxes and light menorah outside. It would be a little bit hard here last night because of the wind, but there are people who figure out ways to do it. So the fact that we can light outside nowadays, would that do away with the whole idea and the custom of lighting in the shul? So according to the Rivash, there are some who say yes. There are others who explain that the purpose of them lighting candles in shul is for pirsumei nisa and publicizing the miracle, not connected to anything, any custom of development of inside, outside. It's just simply, it's to publicize the miracle. When you have a big group of people together, like in shul, you light the menorah so that more people see it all together. Right? That's the opinion of the, one of the opinions of the Kolbo. The Kolbo was it was a work that was a collection of halachos. Not organized completely. It's an unknown author. Nobody's really sure. There are different opinions who wrote the Sefer HaKolbo. But we assume it was written sometime in the 14th or 15th century. But we're not sure exactly who wrote it, because there are different opinions as to who that author is. But he records a number of reasons. And one of the reasons he says, Pirsumei Nisa, if you have a big group of people together, so you light the candles.
And then they did make a bracha.
And make a bracha, according to him, yes. Why else might we light the candles in shul?
Maybe somebody's visiting and we want them to be
okay. Some people don't have candles, right. So another opinion is that the reason why we light candles in shul is similar to the reason why we make Kiddush on Friday night. Now, Kiddush on Friday night, we know, is also a custom, but it's an older custom, because that custom is already recorded in the Gemara. The Gemara already discusses the whole idea, the custom of making Kiddush Friday night in shul, but it's the same question. Why bother making Kiddush in shul Friday night if everybody's going to go home and make Kiddush again? With Kiddush, it's another question, in that we know that Kiddush has to be b'makom suda. Kiddush has to be in the place that you're going to eat. So if you're not going to eat in shul, then why bother making Kiddush in shul if nobody's eating in shul? So the Gemara says that the reason why we make Kiddush in shul is because originally people used to eat in shul. And the orchim, the visitors who would sleep in shul and eat in shul, so they needed to hear Kiddush. So they would make Kiddush for them in shul. And once the custom was developed, the custom kind of just stuck around. So there are those who say that the reason why we light the menorah in shul is similar to the reason why we make Kiddush on Friday night in shul. There are others who learn that reason a little bit differently. Again, that the purpose of the menorah is to be motzi others, to fulfill the obligation for others. So either it's because there are people who are visiting, or it's because it's to train people who otherwise don't know how to light the menorah, or to light the menorah for people who otherwise will not light the menorah, whether because they're not interested in lighting the menorah or they don't have the money to light the menorah. So there are different ways of saying that, and to me that's all one general reason, which is to be motzi others, to fulfill the obligation for others, to somehow facilitate the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Neros Chanukah for other people who are present in shul. And that would be the second reason. What would be another reason? There's one more reason that the Kolbo quotes as to why we light the menorah in shul. No, so that's similar to the last one. That's similar to the last one. And that is that we know that in the Beis HaMikdash there was a menorah as well. And there are opinions, the Ramban has an opinion where he writes on the Torah that the fulfillment of the mitzvah of the menorah is in a way a continuation of the lighting of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. And so the Kolbo writes that the reason why we light the menorah in shul is Zecher LeMikdash. As a remembrance for what was done in the Beis HaMikdash, that we would light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why we light in shul. And again, that goes together with the Ramban, because the Ramban is bothered. In the beginning of Parshas Bahaloscha, so everybody asks, why is Parshas Bahaloscha follow immediately after Parshas Shlach? Parshas Naso, sorry. Why is it immediately after Parshas Naso? So the Rashi quotes a Medrash that says that Aaron HaKohen felt very badly. The end of Parshas Naso, which we heard this morning, is the Nesiim, each of the leaders of each of the tribes, bring a korban. And there's one Shevet, whose tribe is, who's not represented in the celebration of the Mishkan, that's the tribe of Levi. So Aaron comes and says, I feel badly. My tribe is not able to take part. I'm, in a way, the Nasi of the tribe, and my Shevet is not being represented in the celebration of the beginning of the Mishkan. So he felt badly. So Hashem tells Moshe, tell Aaron that your job is greater than theirs, that what you will do is even greater. What did he do? He lit the menorah. So the Mefarshim ask, why is the menorah better than the celebration of bringing korbanos?
Because the menorah you do more than one.
Because the menorah is forever. The menorah is forever, as opposed to the celebration of the korbanos is just then one time. Each shevet brings the korban and they're finished. But is the menorah really forever? Do we have a Beis HaMikdash today that we light a menorah? Is it really a mitzvah that continues to be fulfilled forever, that we can say to Aaron, yours is greater than theirs, it will continue lidoros, it will continue for all time? But what about when you don't have a Beis HaMikdash? So the Ramban answers that in a way, the mitzvah of menorah on Hanukkah is a continuation of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, even though it's true that in the Beis HaMikdash the menorah is no longer lit because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but our lighting of the menorah is similar to a continuation of that mitzvah in the Mishkan. Yeah.
And what happened in between the first and second Beis HaMikdash? Yeah,
good question. It's a good question. It was a shorter time. It's a good question. It's not exact. It's not exactly, because you're right. There, you know, if it was exact, then only the Kohanim in the room should be lighting the menorah. Right? So he was saying, in a way, it's a continuation of that mitzvah ledorah. But it's a good question. It's a good question. So those are the three reasons that we have for why we light the menorah in the shul. Either for the purposes of publicizing the miracle, or for the reason of to fulfill the obligation for others, to be motzi others like Kiddush and Shul Friday night, or as a zecher lemikdash. So there are a number of practical differences between all of these reasons. For example, where should you put the menorah in the shul? Where should you put the menorah in the shul?
In the window.
In the window. So, maybe in the window. So where was in the Beis HaMikdash? It was on the southern wall. It was on the southern part of the base, southern wall in the Beis HaMikdash. Right, which is what most shuls do. The east was that way. We had the menorah over here on the southern wall. There were those who had the custom to put the menorah in the middle of the shul. In the middle of the shul. Why would you put the menorah in the middle of the shul?
So everyone could see it.
If the idea is for Sumi Nisa, it's so everybody could see it. Well, why would you put the menorah on the southern wall of the shul? As a Zeichel HaMikdash. So that's why there were different customs. Happens to be, our custom is, and this is the custom that the Shulchan Aruch quotes, which is in one of the sources, maybe the first source, it says that we put the menorah on the southern wall, but as a Zeichel HaMikdash. There's a discussion in the poskim as to whether a child, somebody, whether he's Higil Chinuch or not, can light the menorah in the shul. Why would there be such a question? That's true. The Kohen couldn't do it unless he was over Bar Mitzvah. So if it's Zeichel HaMikdash, maybe a Katan shouldn't be able to land the shul. Okay, good. Why else?
You can't make someone else go say Bar Mitzvah.
Good. A Katan can't fulfill a mitzvah for somebody else. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Okay, good. A Katan cannot, a Katan can't make Kiddush for me. If I'm obligated in the mitzvah as a gadol, and my obligation is on a deraisa level, even on a derabbanan level, but if my katan, who is not obligated, me'ikar hadin, even if he's only obligated as chinuch, so he can't fulfill the obligation for me. So if the reason for the lighting in the shul is for people who otherwise will not fulfill the mitzvah, then a katan cannot light the menorah. What if the reason for lighting in the shul is pursuing nisa?
Then it maybe just matters that it be lit, but not how it got lit.
So who cares? Who cares who lights it? The fact that it's lit is the purpose of the lighting of the menorah, and therefore, whoever lights it, it would be fine.
But in your house, if I think a katan should light the menorah, you can be okay with that. As long as there's a portion of menorah that's lit in your house.
I don't remember if it's a katan shegi l'chinuch also. Can a katan shegi lechinuch light the menorah in the house and be mot to everybody else? I think so.
Yeah.
It could be. It could be. It could be. We have to check. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was because it would be to assume that the mitzvah of menorah is a chovas bias, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
So that it's just lit.
So the nature of the mitzvah of menorah is, there's a big discussion about menorah, because we know that menorah is an interesting mitzvah. If you, most mitzvahs, if you have 10 people in the house, you can't just have one person shake the lulav and esrog and say it's yotzei for everybody in the house. Right? It doesn't work that way. What we do have is that if we have 10 people in the house, you can put up one mezuzah and be finished. Right? One mezuzah. In fact, you can't say, well, each person in the house is going to put up his own mezuzah on this doorway. If each person has a doorway, that's a different question. But you can't say that I'm going to put up my mezuzah on this doorway and you'll put up your mezuzah on this doorway, because mezuzah is a chovas ha-bayis. Mezuzah is a mitzvah on the house, that there's an obligation. Obviously, if there's nobody living in the house, you don't have a mezuzah. Or if there's not a Jewish person living in the house, it's not a... The house doesn't become mechuyev in the mitzvah, but it's a chovas habayis in that you fulfill it through the house, and therefore the obligation is in a way on the house. So too the menorah, according to many. Right, the question would be, let's say you have a person without a house. Let's say you have a person who's, and this question comes up regarding soldiers. In the Israeli army, if you have a soldier who is sleeping outside, either in a tent, although you could say that a tent is like a house, although it doesn't really have the same level of permanence as a house, and therefore there's no obligation to have a mezuzah on a tent. But let's say you have somebody who's going camping on Hanukkah. Not here, but in the warmer part of the world. And he goes camping on Hanukkah. So does he light the menorah outside next to his bed? So it depends on how connected. Would you say that there's an obligation, so much so that there's an obligation on a person to light the menorah in a house, that's the chovas habayis, that you would say he's pater from mezuzah? If he has no house, there's no obligation to light the menorah, mezuzah also. He wouldn't have to put up a mezuzah next to his bed, but would he have to put up a menorah next to his bed?
Wait, so therefore someone who goes away to, let's say, a hotel over Hanukkah?
Yeah.
Their house, they don't have to light.
So that's a question. How do you define the place that you're living? So that might be different because you're in a house. Right? You're in a room. You're in a house. Now there is a question, we'll talk about it soon, about where, let's say you eat in one place and sleep in another place. Right? You sleep upstairs in the room, but you eat in a general dining room. Or you're away for Shabbos, and you eat in one place and sleep in another place. I remember when I was engaged, so I went to my in-laws for Shabbos, and I slept at somebody else's house down the block, and I ate at my in-laws' house. And it was Hanukkah. So the question was, where do I light? Do I light where I'm sleeping, or do I light where I'm eating? So that's a big discussion also in the poskim, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. But that's why the difference between a hotel and being outside is that in the hotel, at least you have a structure that you're living in. Outside, it's just human nature. So there's no house at all to light it. Right. So that's a question. Would you need a house? Is a temporary structure enough? If you have a temporary structure, would you have an obligation to light a menorah? Right, so that would be a question. So it happens to be there are different opinions. There are different poskim, modern-day authorities who have different opinions as to whether the soldiers should light, shouldn't light. So that's a machlokas of actually modern-day poskim. What else? There's another question as to, do you need a minion to light in shul? Right, do you need a minion? This comes up sometimes on, let's say, Erev Shabbos, tomorrow. Right, you want to make sure that you're lighting before Shabbos, obviously. So ideally, what many shuls do is they daven mincha, and then they light, and then they daven kavol Shabbos. Let's say you're waiting for a minion for mincha. right? Mincha is called for, let's say, 4:10, and you don't get a minyan until 4:20, and Shkia is at 4:28. So you say, there's no way we're going to finish mincha and have time to light candles. So do you have to wait, and you still have 9, or you have 8 people. You say, I can light candles now before mincha. I know a minyan's coming. There's no question, we'll get a minyan. It's just everybody, it takes a little time to get here. I know I'll have a minyan in a few minutes. Do you need the minyan to be there for the candle lighting?
Why would you need the minyan
for candle lighting? Well, right. So the reason why you need a minyan. So if it's Zechel HaMikdash, no need, right? If it's to be motzi others, no need. Even one person would be enough. For Pirsume Nisa, so the way to understand it in a way is that it would be a Pirsume Nisa of a tzibur. That it becomes almost like a, and this the Rav said, and the Shechter writes quotes this from the Rav, that in a way it's a chovas hatzibur, that the Pirsume Nisa is like a completely different type of publicizing the miracle. It's not just publicizing the miracle to 5 people. It would be the obligation of the tzibur to now, if you have a tzibur there, there's now a new obligation or level of mitzvah of Pirsume Nisa. In which case, maybe you need a tzibur to be there in order to light the menorah with a bracha in shul.
But if it's just for the Pirsume Nisa, then they don't
have to be there one night, they have to see it. That's true. Yeah, but some will take it to that. Oh, thank you. Some would take it to the degree where you would actually need them there. Thank you for even for the lighting. And we'll see. There are some who say that you even have to daven together first. The Rav quotes his father, Moshe Soloveitchik, who said that you even need to daven together first in order to then be able to light with a bracha. Which means that in order to light in shul with a bracha, there needs to be a creation of a tzibur, because now the mitzvah that's being fulfilled in the shul is qualitatively different than the mitzvah that you fulfill at home. It's not just, I'm lighting the menorah here in shul, I'm lighting the menorah at home. I'm lighting the menorah as a tzibur. It's almost like Chazaras HaShat. Right? Just like Chazaras HaShat, the Rav has a similar idea by Chazaras HaShat, that he said that it's qualitatively a completely different tefillah than the one that you say in the silent Shmona Esrei. In the silent Shmona Esrei, you daven as individuals. You daven as a yachid. But when you come as a tzibur, when the Chazan is repeating Shmona Esrei, that's a tefillah ha-tzibur. It's the tefillah on behalf of the entire tzibur. It's not just, as the Gemara says, to fulfill the obligation for somebody who doesn't know how to daven. But it's davening, it's approaching Hashem, and Rav Shimshon Pinkus has a similar idea, that it's approaching Hashem and making requests on behalf of the entire tzibur. And that's what Chazaras HaShat is. That's what the Rav, his opinion was that you should stand with your feet together. Even if you're listening to the Chazaras HaShat, you should stand with your feet together as if you're davening. Because according to him, the repetition of the Shmona Esrei of the Shliach Tzibur is not just to fulfill for others, but it's that you're still davening. That each and every person as a member of the Tzibur is still in a way davening. And therefore it would be an obligation on the Tzibur. So he says the same idea by Neros Chanukah, that the Pirsume Nisa is not just the Pirsume Nisa of that 10 people will see this. It's that we as a Tzibur need to now light the menorah and fulfill the obligation of Pirsume Nisa on behalf of the Tzibur. So that's why you would need 10 there for the lighting already. There are those who would say that you need to even daven mincha first. Even if there are 10 people there, but you haven't davened together first, you're not a tzibur yet. Yes?
So let's say that the rest of the minyan comes right away, but you want to say the whole mincha. Could you do an incantation to like a mincha?
Yeah. I mean, in theory, there are two different things that you can do. Either you light before you start mincha, or you try to hurry up mincha. It depends how much time you have. In theory, could you do a hasty kedusha? You could. Some shuls do, some shuls don't. Otherwise, you just light before you start mincha, and then you daven mincha, and then you just go straight into the same way, right? The reason why we wait until after mincha to light on Shabbos afternoon, especially, but even any day, is because we know mincha is connected to the previous day. Lighting the menorah is for the next day. So it wouldn't make sense to light the menorah and then daven mincha. I'm lighting the menorah, let's say tomorrow night. I'm lighting the menorah for the third night of Chanukah, and then I'm davening mincha for the second day of Chanukah. It doesn't make sense. happens to be. That's what a lot of us do at home anyway, right? That's if there's no early mincha that you can go to. So what we do is we light at home, and we have a little extra oil or extra long candles so that it lasts after nightfall. But we light for the third night of Hanukkah tomorrow night, and then we come to shul and we'll daven mincha for the second day of Hanukkah. So we do that anyway, but we try to minimize that contradiction as much as we can. So, but yeah, in theory you could.
So you're saying it's a bit of a steer if you daven in shul,
yeah,
after you light. So you were lighting before Shabbos.
Right.
Start to the Sasra, then go and have mincha though it's the day before.
Right. Right.
So what do you suggest as a remedy?
So you could. Some places have an early minyan. Some places have like a 3 o'clock mincha. If not, then if some people do daven the achidus mincha. You know, it's brought down that this contradiction exists. So that's what people have been doing.
Okay, so it's early minyan or davening the achidus.
Or you just do it, or you just light and you come to shul and daven mincha. All are options. It depends. Ideally, you daven mincha earlier with a tzibur, and then you light, and then you come to shul. If that's not an option, so there are some who would say daven b'chidus, and others would say don't daven b'chidus. It's not worth to daven b'chidus at the expense of tefillah b'tzibur. Better you should just light earlier with in mind that it's for the next night, and then come to shul and daven. So you know, that's what we do here. We have a mincha, regular mincha minyan. So there is one other nafka mina, and that is do we light in the morning? Most shuls have the minhag to also light the menorah in the morning. Why do we light in the morning? There's no mitzvah in the morning.
That would be Pirsumei Nisa.
So that's a question. Maybe it's Pirsumei Nisa. But what Pirsumei Nisa is there? Right? In a way, there's Pirsumei Nisa. But in a way, you can say that the only time there's a mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa, or an obligation, or a fulfillment of Pirsumei Nisa, is at the time of the mitzvah. But if it's not the time of the mitzvah, then what Pirsumei Nisa is there? Right? It's like the same thing. Is it, if it's not at the time of the mitzvah, it's the equivalent of, putting up a sign that says Happy Hanukkah. Right? There'd be no difference. Both of them are publicizing that it's Hanukkah that we're celebrating. In a way. Or you could say, no, this is with the menorah. So I'm lighting the menorah, and there's a big group of people together here in shul in the morning. Yes, I know, I'm not doing the mitzvah. Everybody knows there's no fulfillment of the mitzvah now. But still, it's publicizing the miracle of Hanukkah. So it could be.
You don't say the bracha in the morning.
You don't say the bracha in the morning. So you see a little bit less of a fulfillment. So most assume that it is, in some way, a Pirsumei Nisa. Even though it's not at the time of the mitzvah, the fact that you're not lighting, there's no bracha. So what do you lose? Right, what do you lose?
The menorah
like
also was on for the whole day, right?
Ah, so yeah. So the most reasonable explanation to why we light in the morning is because Zecher LeMikdash. Because in the Beis HaMikdash, the menorah was lit. And if they came in the morning, and when the Kohanim came back in the morning and found any of the lights out, any of the wicks out in the Beis HaMikdash, they would relight it in the morning. So in a way, it's connected to that while they're there in the morning, just like the Tamid Shal Shachar, the daily morning korban and the daily afternoon korban, so too they would, make sure that the candles would be lit throughout the day. So in a way, it's more connected to that. It's either the Zecher LeMikdash or it's some form of Pirsumei Nisa, publicizing the miracle even in the morning. But the other reason of fulfilling the obligation for somebody else certainly wouldn't apply in the morning. So fine. So that's the sugya of lighting candles in shul. The question is now apply that to lighting not in shul, but this is, what we can use that as a basis to now say, let's say at a party where it's nobody's home. Let's assume it's nobody's house. So either you're at a hall or you're at a restaurant. So should you light, or you're out in the park, should you light the menorah with a bracha or at all or not? Yeah.
Well, if you're able to make it home, then no, but
so what does it mean, make it home in time? Make it home in time for what?
To light with the mitzvah lighting.
When's the mitzvah of lighting?
Half hour after 6.
So ideally, we light around 6. But when can you fulfill the mitzvah of lighting the menorah? Throughout the night, as long as?
People walking by.
As long as somebody to see it.
People walking by.
Or nowadays that we light the menorah inside the house, it's as long as somebody's awake in the house. So as long as there's one other person awake in the house who's going to see your menorah, you can still fulfill the mitzvah of the menorah. So if you live alone, that's a good question. That's a good question.
Can you wake them?
That's also a question. The posting discussed whether you can. Can you wake them? Yeah. On a plane is a good question. Also, happens to be practically on a plane. There's no good answer because you can't light a fire on a plane. The only option on a plane that you have to have any type of fulfillment is an electric menorah. Of course, it has to be battery operated because they have no outlets on planes either. But if you had a battery operated electric menorah, and I would say that it would be better if it was an incandescent bulb battery operated light menorah. So, you know, we're really cutting it. The likelihood of being able to fulfill anything. But even LEDs, maybe, what electric menorah, what would it fulfill?
Nothing.
It would be Persimmonisa. Everybody else on the plane. Nobody would see out the window, but everybody else on the plane would see. Everybody else on the plane would see. So there is some. I did hear from a Rosh Hashiva once who said that when he goes to a hotel, I think he said this, when he goes to a hotel, he tries to light at least an electric menorah in his room. He doesn't make a bracha on it, obviously, because it needs to be, you know, lighting the menorah, but at least that there's some Persumenisa, he lights an electric menorah in his room. Because in the case of a hotel, you can't light a candle, you can't light downstairs, you can't light upstairs, so there's no other option, so he lights in the room. Yeah.
Let's say you're divorced and your only children are under bar mitzvah,
because they still be able to get on the house. Yes, I think so. But there's a question about presuming Nisa, does it have to be Jews, can it be non-Jews, can it be children? There is a discussion about that, and yeah, I think they would all be considered Persimmonisa.
Yeah,
they can't touch it. Yeah, they can sense the light in the room.
Yeah,
good question. Yeah. Well, so the problem with that is that the candles need to be lit for at least a half hour.
They have to be able to do it.
Yeah, but you can't blow them out after less than a half hour. You're putting them out then by slamming the door. True. Comes to Ein Zakuk Lo, we're asking that if the light goes out, you don't have to relight the light. But we don't light them in a way that we know we're going to either have to blow them out in less than a half hour, or that they will. You can't put them outside.
To be lit for at least half an hour.
Yeah, but it's kind of both, because it actually needs to really be able to be lit for half. It's not just that there needs to be enough oil to light for a half hour, and then I light it for 5 minutes and then blow them out. But they have the potential while I lit them to be lit for a half hour.
If you lit in a very windy place where it's not.
So that would right. So that would be a question as to whether you can make a bracha. If you're outside and you don't have one of those glass boxes, one of those wind-resistant boxes, so it would be a question as to whether you would be able to light outside. Yeah, certainly. So there is a question about... here, I'm running out of time. So there is a question about, let's say, lighting at a public gathering or lighting in a restaurant. Again, somewhere where it's nobody's home. So I would say the majority opinion is that you should not make a bracha on such a lighting. The reason why the majority opinion is that is because they felt that if as we see, there's so much written to just explain and to explain why the custom developed to light the menorah in the shul, that it's almost, let's not expand that. You know, they worked hard enough to explain why that's okay. Let's not expand it to say, well, since we do that, let's expand it to other places as well. You know, to make a bracha is in their minds a big deal, and therefore they felt that there's no reason and it shouldn't be done to add on to that minhag and expand it if it was so hard to explain the minhag itself. Then there's those who are, let's say, the middle opinion, which is Rav Aji Yosef writes in this way, and in the Sefer Yalkut Yosef, his son, quotes this opinion as well, and that is that if you're going to daven at that place, then you can light a menorah there. Right? And the idea there is that in a way, you're creating a shul. right? If you're going to daven mincha there, or you're going to daven ma'ariv there, so in a way it's like a shul. So once it's a shul, so then you can light the menorah in the shul, just like you light in a shul. And that's what I was referencing before, where Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was of the opinion that not only if you will daven there, but you can only light if you already daven there, because you need to create the tzibur. And now, in their opinion, it was an obligation of the tzibur of Pirsumei Nisa that the whole group together now has an obligation or a mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa for the nearest Hanukkah. So only if you first light, only if you first daven, and then would you be able to light. And then there are those opinions who are comfortable with the idea of lighting in these public places. Rav Binyamin Zilber, who passed away just a few years ago, in his Tshuva Sefer Od Nidberu, obviously in the Chabad literature and their Tshuvos that they wrote also, and their explanation is that this is even better than a shul, in a way. Because in a shul you have X amount of people, and at these public gatherings there might even be more people. So if the reason why we lighten the shul is for Pirsumei Nisa, then this is even greater Pirsumei Nisa, and therefore they say that you should be able to light with a bracha. So those are the different opinions as to whether one would light at a public gathering, in a restaurant, in a hall, in the park. So different opinions, different minhagim, but this is all what it's based on. So let's just quickly go through a few other issues. One is, so let's say, good, that's if it's, you know, at nobody's house. So what if it's at somebody else's house? So if it's at somebody else's house and I can't light there because I'm going to go home. So if I'm going home, which is what Yehuda said before, if you're going home to make it in time for the mitzvah, so that's right, you go home and make it in time for the mitzvah. But what does it mean in time for the mitzvah? So Neres Chanukah is, in theory, kasher kol halayla. You can light it all night long. And therefore, as long as when you get home, if you're coming home with your family, then you'll all be awake, or at least some of you will be awake at the end of the car ride. So you have to even get the ones who sleep into the house. So you can light the menorah then when everybody will come into the house. So let's say I'm at my cousin's house for a Hanukkah party or for a Thanksgiving meal, and they're going to light candles there because it's their house. So when I see those candles, there is such a concept in Neres Hanukkah as Birchas Haroeh. No, you're not Yotze because you didn't light, but Birchas Haroeh, which means, the Gemara says, that if a person lights the candles, he makes three brachas on the first night. If you see the candles, you make two. And on every other night, if you light the candles, you make two brachos of Lahadlik and Sha'asa Nisim. And if you see the candles, you make the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim, just by seeing the candles. So let's say there I am, sitting at the meal, they light the candles, I see them. Do I now have an obligation to say the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim? Why not?
And then
when I make it again when I go home. Right? So if you say yes.
One is the active Pirsumei Nisa, the other is passive Pirsumei Nisa. You're the one.
True.
So there may be a difference there.
There is a difference. It's very good. It's a very good difference in that one you're actively creating and in one you're witnessing. So would I make the bracha twice? Can I make the bracha twice? Or should I make the bracha
it's the
twice?
The same bracha, even though it's the same bracha, it's the same bracha at both times.
Right, that's a good question also.
When people feel welcome, it's for presuming it's a by a law, and that's only for by a law that you're allowed to have as many hadassim and rabos.
No, that's different. That would be different. It's whether you can add to the hadassim aravos. That's just beautifying the mitzvah. This would actually be making a bracha twice. If anything, this would be in a way taking the lulav and esrog in the morning and then taking the lulav and esrog again in the afternoon. Would you make a bracha both in the morning and in the afternoon? You can do it twice, but do you make a bracha twice? So there, certainly the answer would be no. Here, in that it might be different, the question is, should you make the bracha twice? Or should you make the bracha, and if you only make it once, should you make it when you see it, or should you make it when you light? So it's a big question. It's a machlokas in the Rishonim, as to whether or not, when the Gemara says that a person who sees the menorah makes these brachos. So there's a machlokas. Rashi says, that he quotes an opinion, that it's somebody who is going home and has not yet lit the menorah. Right? He has not yet lit the menorah. So what does it mean that he has not yet lit the menorah? He says the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim. It means that he's going to light the menorah. And he's going to light the menorah, and still, when he sees it, he makes a sha'asa nisim. Which, according to that opinion that Rashi's quoting, is that if you're on your way home from work on any given night, and you pass by somebody's window, and you see their menorah lit in their window, you should make the bracha of sha'asa nisim, even though you're on your way home to fulfill the mitzvah of Neir Hanukkah.
And then you say it again?
And according to that opinion, you probably wouldn't say it again.
You wouldn't say it.
Would not say it again. Probably.
No one would ever make the bracha.
Oh, very good. Or in shul. Right. Right. So if you're in shul and you see it, you make a birchas haroah. Or in our case, if you're sitting at the Hanukkah party or the Thanksgiving meal and you see somebody else lighting the menorah and you know you're going home to light the menorah, you make a bracha of sha'asa nisim. So according to this opinion that Rashi quotes, Rabbi Yitzchak, I think, he would say that you make the bracha the first time you see the candles lit. The majority opinion is that that's not the case. But rather, the only time the rabbis created this idea of Birchas Haroah, of when you see the menorah, you should make the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim, is if you're not going to light the menorah later. So if you're not going to light the menorah later, then you would make a bracha of Sha'asa Nisim. It's almost like that. It's almost like a busy event. That ideally you should light the menorah, and if you light the menorah, you make the bracha of Lahadlik and the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim. If you're not going to be able to light the menorah, and that's the second case that Rashi quotes, is that if you're on a boat, and it seems that he would be saying that, and you won't be lighting on the boat, but you can see on the shore, you can see the menorah, then you would make the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim. And therefore, if you're on your way home from shul, or you're in shul, or you're on your way from home from work, or you're at the party and you see somebody else lighting the menorah, but you plan on going home to light the menorah, you wouldn't make the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim. That's the opinion of the Hagos Maimonios. That's the opinion that the Shulchan Aruch quotes. The machlokas seems to be, maybe, although we don't really have time to get into it, but I'll just mention it and let you think about it. The machlokas seems to be whether the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim is like a berachah mitzvah, and therefore you should do it when you're going to light, and only if you're not going to light would you then fulfill it in this almost bidyevet type of way, but you would only be able to say it once a night. Or would you say, in a way, it's like a berachah shevach vehoda. It's like a Birchas Haroah. It's a completely different bracha. And in a way, even when you light your menorah, when you say Sha'asa Nisim, maybe the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim, when you light the menorah, is not on the lighting of the menorah, but it's on your seeing the lit menorah. Which the truth is, there is a custom of the Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik had the minhag, I think it was Reb Chaim, or Moshe Soloveitchik, I think it was Reb Chaim, that he would make the bracha of lahadlik, then he would light a candle, and then say Sha'asa Nisim. Because the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim is always on your seeing the lit menorah, not on your lighting the menorah. And therefore, according to that opinion, it doesn't matter if you lit the menorah or not, it's the same bracha of Sha'asa Nisim. The Sha'asa Nisim that you make when seeing somebody else light the menorah, or the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim that you make when you lit the menorah, is the same bracha. It's on seeing the candles lit. So, I don't know that Reb Chaim would take it that far, but they do say, they tell stories of Moshe Soloveitchik and the Rav, that they would walk home from shul with their head down, if they didn't see the candle lighting in shul, so that they shouldn't see in the windows the menorah being lit.
Putting Sha'asa Nisim before you actually light the heftik almost, because Hanlik Ner Sha'asa
Nisim. No, then you light. That's interesting. Oh, unless you say that Sha'asa Nisim is part of like a brachas mitzvah. If it's a brachas mitzvah, then it has to be beforehand. And if it's a brachas shevach of celebration, then it has to be afterwards. So.
Okay, we gotta weigh that.
Yeah.
What was the rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik do about the candles that are lit in shul?
Yeah.
Would they also be?
Would they say
Sha'asa Nisim? I'm saying, would they be careful not to look
at? Yeah, I don't know. I think it was Reb Chaim actually. I apologize. I think it was Reb Chaim. So I don't know. In theory, they should, unless you want to say, you could make a distinction,
right,
and say that the candles in shul are a minhag, and not actually fulfilling any mitzvah, and therefore maybe there's no obligation to say a Birchas Haroah on those candles, as opposed to the candles that somebody lit l'shem mitzvah, where if you see those, you have to make a Berachas Haroah.
But the person who was actually lighting the Isham was just lighting the...
I would say you can make the same distinction.
According to them, they would not say Shabbat anything at all? But on lighting that?
No, they probably would.
Probably would.
Okay, they probably would, but as a minhag, mitam minhag. I hear. He's saying it's either or. Unless you say that the lighting in the shul is a minhag as you do it in the home, and then, but that doesn't obligate everybody else to make a berachas haroah on a menorah that was lit as a minhag. Right, so you can make such a distinction, I think, in misfara. Question?
See the
light. Yes, see the light. You have to see the candle.
Let's say you see the flames,
but you don't see the candle. Yeah, it's probably enough. You see the flames. Mm-hmm. That's enough. Anyway, everybody assumes that if you're going to light later that night, the Shulchan Aruch says, you don't make the bracha of Sha'as HaNisim when you see the candles lit. You only make it if you're not going to light that night. I'll just close with, we didn't get to the if you eat in one place, sleep in the other, but if you want, we can talk about it quickly afterwards, but I don't want to hold everybody up, and Rabbi Ezos is scheduled to speak now anyway. There is an opinion of the Rambam quotes in the Tshuvas HaRambam, where the Rambam says that you're asking, would you go back, would you make the bracha of Sha'as HaNisim more than once? If you see 10 menorahs, would you make it 10 times? Or if you say it once on your way home, would you say it again when you light the menorah? The Rambam quotes an opinion in his tshuva that you would. And that you can make the bracha of Sha'as HaNisim as many times, as long as there's a break in between, each time you would see a menorah. Why? Basically, the way I would understand it is, basically because the whole essence of the bracha of Sha'as HaNisim L'Avosenu Bayamim Ahem Bezman Hazeh is a Berachas Shevach VeHodah. It is completely different than a Berachas HaMitzvah, where you have a mitzvah of Neres Chanukah, you say Asher Kiddushanu V'Mitzvot V'Tzivanu L'Hadlik Ner Shel Chanukah. You have Tfilin Asher Kiddushanu V'Mitzvot V'Tzivanu L'Haniach Tfilin. You have Lulav Asher Kiddushanu. Those are Berachas HaMitzvah, in that when you do the mitzvah, you say it beforehand. We have other brachos that the whole purpose of the bracha is simply to give shevach lehodah to Hashem. Is lightning, thunder, those are praise brachos. Those are brachos that are simply statements, and therefore we don't say, there's no mitzvah there. It's to praise Hashem for, excuse me, whatever it is that we're praising Him for. So in a way, if you say that the bracha of Sha'as HaNisim is a berachas HaMitzvah, so you do it once. You say it once when you fulfill the mitzvah. But if the bracha is a berachas shevach vehodah, it means that you can make the bracha as many times the same way. If there's a thunderstorm in the morning and then there's a thunderstorm in the afternoon, you would make two separate brachos on the thunder. So too, you would make two separate brachos each time you would see the menorah if there's a break in between, because the purpose of the bracha is to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I don't want to feel like I gave out these sheets for nothing. So if you look on the bottom, source number three, is the Rambam. And the Rambam says in Hilchos Chanukah, the end of Hilchos Chanukah, in Halacha Yud Beis, Mitzvah Ner Chanukah, Mitzvah Chaziva Hi Me'od, that the Mitzvah of Chanukah is very beloved. V'tzarech Adam Lehizahir Ba Kedei Lehodiya Haneis. We need to be careful to fulfill it in order to publicize the miracle, to teach everybody about the miracle, ula hosif b'shevach hakel v'hodaya lo al anisim sh'asalanu, and to add thanks and praise to Hashem for the miracles that He did for us. The whole mitzvah of Hanukkah is simply to recognize and to feel our gratitude and thanks to Hashem, which is why the Rambam calls it a mitzvah chaviva hi ad ma'od. You know, there is a big discussion about why we have 8 days of Hanukkah. If there was enough oil in the pitcher to light for one day, so then the miracle only lasted 7 days. The famous question of the Beis Yosef. So why have 8 days of Hanukkah? Have 7 days of Hanukkah. There were 7 days of miracle, not eight. The first one wasn't a miracle. There was oil. So one of the answers that's given, it's like by many, including the Mashgiach Saba Mikelm, so he explains that in the miracle of the candles of the oil continuing to burn for those extra 7 days. And when we saw something that, if you didn't watch closely, you wouldn't notice. Right? If you came late to the Beis HaMikdash those 7 mornings, you would have no idea that anything miraculous was happening. You would assume, okay, maybe they found some more oil. But in the nature, in the change of nature, but in the subtle, small change, miraculous change, in the same way with the war, happened to be there was a small group who defeated a great group. But we have many times where there's a small army, the underdog defeats the favored, and the small army defeats the greater, stronger army. We have such things, but if we don't see in those the miracles, or if we don't look closely, we miss the miraculous nature of what happened. The Sadhu Mikelem explains that by looking closely and realizing that something miraculous is happening, even though it doesn't look so miraculous, there was no sea splitting, there were no plagues, we didn't hear Hashem's voice, there was no mountain on fire. But in the subtle changes that we're not used to in the nature of the world, it teaches us to realize that all that we take for granted in the natural world is also miraculous in its nature. And therefore, yeah, as the Gemara in Taina says, the same person who tells the oil to light can tell the vinegar to light. So too, the same person who, but it's the opposite way also. It's just as it would be miraculous to us that vinegar should light, we should see the miracles in the natural world as well, in the fact that the oil lights. And that's the idea of Hanukkah, is the ability to see and to learn from the subtle changes in nature, that even that which we take for granted, that we're used to, that is natural, even that is a miracle in itself, in a way. And even that is a gift from Hashem. That's why, he says, that's why we celebrate that first day, because the 7 days of miracles allow us to see in the first day the thanks and the praise for HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us, and for giving us even the natural world. And that's what we celebrate. That's the idea of Hanukkah. In a way, you know, it's not such a terrible thing when Hanukkah and Thanksgiving collide, in that in both days, we live in the American society, we see it in around us on the days of Thanksgiving, that people find things to feel thanks for, to give thanks for, the attitude of gratitude. That's really the feelings that we should have every year on Hanukkah. And in a way, it makes it easier for us to feel that on Hanukkah. The creation of the day of Thanksgiving, if you look back in the history books, it was created in the same way. It was after some terrible winter, and they were worried about a harvest, and they finally had a good harvest, and they convinced George Washington to proclaim a day in 1763 or 1789, whatever it was exactly, but to proclaim a day that they would be thankful for this great harvest and this great bounty and plenty that they found. In a way, it was their way of saying that we're appreciating even the natural world, the things that sometimes we take for granted, because it's when we don't have it, or when something happens out of the ordinary, that we appreciate the ordinary and see it as well as a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the miracles of Hanukkah teach us. That's the idea, the feeling that the mitzvah of the menorah is supposed to awaken inside of us, the feelings of seeing even in the natural world the appreciation and the thanks that we have to Hashem. And that's why the mitzvah of Hanukkah is chavivahi ad me'od, as the Ramban writes in the Parshas Bo, that when we see the great miracles, we realize from them, and we learn from them, that even the small miracles, we see the small miracles, we see the hidden miracles, the things that we don't otherwise notice. That's why we have all these mitzvahs, such as Zecher Yetzias, and trying to remember the Exodus from Egypt, which was all revealed, obvious miracles, because by doing so, it teaches us, and it reminds us each time to appreciate that which we view as natural, is really miraculous as well. And that's what Hanukkah teaches us as well. So we should all enjoy, we should all feel these feelings of Hallel Dehoda, Shavach Lamakom in the day, in the celebrations of the day, and have a Freilich and Hanukkah. Thank you.